the most sophisticated things we know about the logic and semantics of classical computing and try to generalize into the quantum domain. If you're being less generous, it could be because I'm a physicist and I learned most of my computer science from Neeltha and Chang. So I'll leave you to decide which of those is the case. So what I want to talk about is, first of all, I want to spend a bit of time motivating why I'm interested in this. And my motivation really comes from trying to understand our basic notions of in quantum complexity theory and our basic models of quantum computing. So my proposed idea for what a really basic kind of logic of quantum computing should be is sequential quantum logic. But as you can see from my title, the word non-deterministic is in there. If it said deterministic, then I would have been entirely successful in what I was trying to do, and I would be claiming that this was indeed the logic of quantum computing. But as it is, I think it gives some useful insights into ways we might go about constructing new models of quantum computing and looking at some issues in quantum complexity. Okay, so here's my starting motivation. This is the thing that really got me into this whole idea of the logic of quantum computing. This is a really basic way in which Boolean classical logic appears in classical complexity theory. So I'm sure this is well known to the vast majority of people here. So this is the famous Cook-Levin result that satisfiability is an NP complete problem. So given any Boolean formula, you have to decide if there are truth value assignments to the elementary propositions that make the whole formula true. Now notice that although I'm fully aware that Boolean logic itself doesn't capture everything that's interesting about classical computing, as we've seen, in fact, in the past couple of days. But when you talk about these really basic ideas and complexity, it turns out that Boolean logic, or a problem in Boolean logic, actually captures everything you're interested in there. It captures everything that can be done in that particular complexity class. So my question is, really, is there a good quantum analog of this? Can I replace the words Boolean formula there with something quantum mechanical, some kind of quantum logic, perhaps, and make that theorem true of the quantum analogs of NP? So that particular result is fairly intuitive once you've understood one of the basic models of classical computer science, which is the circuit model. It's directly based on Boolean algebra, of course. You have AND gates and NOT gates and so forth. And you can think of any classical computation in the circuit model, at least, one that computes the decision problem, so it has one output, it's either 0 or 1. I can think of that as just a test of a Boolean proposition. Okay, so it tests, the inputs represent the truth values of certain elementary propositions, and all that circuit does is it forms a test of some compound proposition. So one might hope that you could get a model of quantum computing in which had a similar kind of interpretation. Okay, a very simple model of quantum computing, which you could think of as making logical tests. So our current models of quantum computing, I claim, aren't exactly like that. The quantum circuit model, for instance, is inspired by classical reversible circuits, but it has no direct analog that's like this in terms of basic irreversible logic operations, for instance. The measurement-based models of computing are perhaps the closest thing we have to this yet, especially if we try to take into account what people in the quantum logic community have been studying for many years, which is the fact that the logic of quantum mechanics seems to have something to do with the structure of measurements in quantum mechanics. So what's the most naive way you might think of making a a quantum model of computing based on this? Well, one very simple idea is to just simply replace all these gates with their analogs from quantum logic. Okay, so Birkhoff von Neumann quantum logic, for instance. Well, that's a very naive idea. Now, the reason why it's naive, I'm not going to go into details, is because it actually turns out that you can simulate that on a classical computer, a fact which was only recently pointed out to me by Scott Aronson. another reason why it's naive is because in computing, we necessarily have to do things in sequence, okay? You necessarily have to do one operation, and then you have to do another operation after that, and so forth. And standard quantum mechanics is more, standard quantum logic is more about possible alternative measurements that you could make at a single time than it is about sequences. So what we really want, and what the measurement-based models of computing suggest, I think, is that a very basic logic of quantum computing might be a logic of sequences of measurements rather than the standard quantum logic. So of course, what I want to do is investigate if I replace these AND gates by something like an AND then gate. Okay, so it means that I have to do a test of the first proposition, say the one that's on the upper line, and then afterwards I have to do a test of the second proposition. Does that capture the basic model of computing? And of course, to do that, I would have to show that something I get out of that kind of construction is simulable in the classical circuit model, and in fact that any classical circuit can be translated into that sort of language. Now, I'm not quite there yet, but as a first stage, what I did was I took a look at some of the history of the quantum logic literature and tried to find out if they ever came up with something which might actually be anything close to this. So I'm not really an expert on quantum logic, but I did find something which closely resembles the sort of structure that I'm looking for, although it's not perhaps exactly right. And that's something called sequential quantum logic. So this was developed towards the end of the 70s and at the beginning of the 80s by Stackauer and Mittelstadt. And I'm going to use pretty much their formalism. And a side remark is that it was extended in the mid-90s by Chris Isham and some collaborators as a possible route to quantum gravity and consistent historicist formalism in quantum theory. And in fact, it has a lot of common ground with that formalism, if you're familiar with it. So the basic idea here is that we want to talk about sequences of quantum measurements, and the sort of paradigm example of that is to think about measuring, say, a spin a half particle in a sequence of Stern-Gerlach magnets. Okay, so I have a first magnet which is oriented in the x direction, and the particle either comes out on the up path or the down path, and then I do a further one oriented in the second direction, and I want to somehow interpret these different lines that come out of these two boxes as different logical statements. So the top line there, I want to interpret as up x and then up y. Yeah? So something like that, and similarly for all the others. Okay, so I'm going to give a very brief and incomplete overview of the syntax of this thing. So there are many parts of this that I've skipped, but they're not going to be particularly relevant because I'm mostly interested in the Hilbert space model of this thing. But basically, what you have is a set L of elementary propositions and another set S, which are going to be your sequential propositions. And you have two operators. One, the first one, the square cap, has the interpretation of and then. And the other one is the usual negation operator. Okay, so we build up the set of sequential propositions from the set of elementary propositions inductively. So the rules, there are three rules. If A is an elementary proposition, then it's also a sequential proposition. If A and B are sequential propositions, then there's a proposition A and then B. And if if A is a sequential proposition, then not A is a sequential proposition. So the important thing to note is that the and then operator is not going to be assumed to be commutative. That's basically because we want to capture the fact that quantum mechanics is non-commutative, the fact that measuring y and then x is not the same as measuring x and then y. But it is going to be associative, so that allows you to remove brackets from one expressions and so forth. And there's a bit more to it than that, which you can find in Stagnell's papers if you're interested. But that's going to be sufficient for our purpose. So I want to move on to the Hilbert space model of this thing. So suppose we have a Hilbert space, then I can associate the elementary propositions with the lattice of projection operators on that Hilbert space. So that's in the same way as you do in standard quantum logic. Okay. So I'm going to introduce a bit of notation. This square bracket means the operator that's associated to a particular proposition. And then you can easily define the operator associated to the negation and the sequential conjunction. So the negation, you just take the identity operator minus the original operator. And the sequential conjunction is just defined by a product of operators like that. So notice that if you have this, because you have this product in sequential conjunction, your propositions in S in general, the sequential propositions, aren't going to be projection operators themselves. Now, if you want, you can notice that you can, if you allow limit propositions, so if you allow yourself to take infinitely many sequential conjunctions, then you can actually define the usual quantum logical conjunction in terms of the sequential one. So sequential quantum logic is in some ways a larger logic than the standard quantum logic. But there's a slight problem, well actually a fairly big problem from our point of view, with the standard definitions. There's a laser pointer. So the sequential quantum logic, it works very well for the kind of situation that I showed a couple of slides ago. So this is kind of a formalization of that. So these boxes here represent tests of elementary propositions. They have two outcomes. I can either show that proposition A is true or its negation is true. And then, you know, if you stick a state in a box that does that test, these are the states that come out. And the probabilities are given by the norm squared of these states. And if I do another test straight afterwards, I get these four possibilities. And that gives me the correct states and the correct probabilities as well. But we might have hoped that you'd be able to cross grain over such measurements. So in particular, what happens in sequential quantum logic if I consider a measurement of A and then B versus the rest? Well, if I do it by just performing this sequence of two measurements and then forgetting which of these three outcomes occurred, then in that case, quantum mechanics would tell me that if I get one of these three outcomes, I have to take an incoherent mixture over these three states. Okay. But the algebra of sequential quantum logic that I just described via this prescription for the negation here actually tells me that this state here corresponds to actually a coherent superposition over these three states. Okay. So that's fair enough. But what we now have to ask ourselves is, actually, is there a physical measurement in quantum theory that will do this? Is there a measurement that will give me this state with the probability given by the norm squared here, and this state with the probability given by the norm squared? And well, the answer to that is that there isn't. Now, one can easily check that's the case. Here are the operators that correspond to those two propositions. And these ought to be a pair of generalized measurement operators. So there should be a POVM that corresponds to the adjoint of this operator times this operator, and the adjoint of this operator times this operator itself. And those two should sum to the identity. And if you check, that's generally not the case unless AMP commute. Okay, so there is no measurement which will do this. But we don't usually let things like that phase us in quantum information these days. If there's something that you can't do physically, the next question to ask is, well, can I do it approximately in some way? So there are two notions that we usually use for that. We can either say, well, I'm interested in doing this on some particular class of states, and on average, I want the outputs to be as close to what they should be as possible. So that's a kind of minimum error way of doing things. But another way is to look at unambiguous ways of doing things. So I can introduce a third outcome that comes out of this box, which corresponds to a failure. And conditional on not getting the failure outcome, I can ask that the relative probabilities of these two, I can ask that the states are as they should be on these two lines, and that the relative weights of them are as they should be according to the norm squared of these states. So basically, that's what my algorithm for testing these things does for an arbitrary sequential quantum logic proposition. So the algorithm, although perhaps it doesn't have to be expressed in this way, it's based on some fairly recent developments on applying quantum information ideas to the density matrix renormalization. So if you don't know what that is, it doesn't matter because I'll explain everything you need to know. But that might be of interest to people who know about these things. There are basically three main steps. Okay, so first of all, I'm going to prepare a particular state that's related to the underlying sequence of measurements in my proposition. So if you look at these two propositions, two cases here, there's an underlying sequence of measurements, A, B, and it's the same underlying sequence here. I first do something related to A and then something related to B. Similarly, in any formula, I just read the propositions from left to right. That's what I mean by the underlying sequence. So it somehow encodes that sequence of measurements. And then I apply what in the DMRG terminology would be rounds of renormalization. Computationally, what they're doing is they're basically coherent and not gates. And that'll get me the value of the desired proposition. And then finally, I'll end up with a qubit which I can measure, which will effectively test that proposition. Now, of course, because this has to be non-deterministic, one of these steps must be. So it's actually the second step. These renormalization operators, what that means is that you essentially project onto a subspace of your Hilbert space. And of course, the only way you can do that is by performing a measurement, which doesn't always succeed. Okay, so I'm just going to illustrate this with a very simple example, and it should be fairly clear how the generalization works. So suppose we start with this simple proposition here, which is not A and then B and then C. Okay, so I'm going to denote any of the three elementary propositions just by X. So if there's an X, it means that there's one of the things is defined for A, one for B, and one for C. I'm further going to assume, just for simplicity, that they're all assigned to one-dimensional projectors on the Hilbert space of a single qubit. Now, that's actually not at all necessary, the algorithm. It's just for simplicity that you can do the algorithm for arbitrary dimensions. I'm going to introduce another bit of notation which is useful, which x0 means the negation of x, and x1 means the proposition x itself. And later I'm going to need to define some unitary operators that take me from the computational basis to the basis which is effectively defined by this projector. So that the one state is mapped onto the state here, and the zero state is mapped onto any state orthogonal to that, which is, of course, in the two-dimensional case, just unique up to global phase. So what I mean by the history state, the goal of the first step is to prepare a state which looks like this. Okay, so this is like applying the sequence of three measurements to an input state here, but I saw the results of all the measurements in a coherent superposition. And generally, since I'm going to be throwing away qubits during the algorithm, I'm going to label the qubits here by, so the subscript here will tell me what proposition, the outcome of what proposition is stored in that qubit. You'll see how that works later. Okay, so how do you go about preparing one of these history states? Well, you can do this part deterministically, and in the literature on DMRG, it's a kind of state which is known as a PEP state, or it's a special kind of matrix product state, really. And well, anyway, this is basically what that means. It means that you can prepare it starting from three maximally entangled states, plus my input state, of course, which I also need. Now I'm going to start off with some ancillary particles. So there's going to be one qubit for each proposition I'm testing, and there's also going to be an ancillary qubit for each one, and that's going to get thrown away during the preparation stage. So I'll end up with just the three qubits. So what this idea of PEP state means, it means that there's some operator I can apply on these two qubits here, and on these two qubits here, and on these two qubits here, such that the state I want, the history state, is just these three operators acting on my starting state, which was the three maximally entangled states. And these operators have the following form. They're related to the projectors. You can explicitly work out, if you like, that if you apply this to this state, then this is what you get. So basically, the aim of the preparation stage is going to be, well, these aren't physical operators, right? They, you know, in particular, the dimension of the output is less than the dimension of the input, so I somehow have to tell you how that's prepared, how you can physically implement those things. So I'm not going to go through this in detail, but there is an algorithm that will let you do that deterministically. It's a bit like teleportation or gate teleportation or something like that. But the basic point is that the effect of all these five steps is just to apply these operators on that input state. So now we have this state, and now we come to the probabilistic part. So the question is, well, basically, now I have lots of information stored in this state. If I measure these three qubits in the computational basis, then I actually get a sequence of, I get the results of the whole sequence of measurements. Whereas actually, I only want one bit. I only want one bit of information about this proposition here. Now, the fact is that the information about this proposition is actually encoded in the correlations between these three. So what I want now is a method of distilling out those correlations into a single qubit. And that's exactly the sort of thing that's done in ring normalization group. So there are only two operators that I have to apply. So the first stage is basically to compute the subproposition here, A and then B. And you can do that by, if it were possible to apply this operator to the state up there, then I would get exactly the history state that I want, which encodes the outcome of A and then B, and also the outcome of C. Now, again, this is an operator that you can't directly implement physically, and in fact, you can only implement it probabilistically, and I'll show you how to do that in a minute. But once you've done that, then computing the negation of that subproposition is easy. You just do a bit flip on this first qubit, and then finally you can compute the whole proposition by applying another one of these coherent AND operations. And that will give you this state, which is the one that you want. If you were to measure this qubit here, then it will give you the two states that you want with the correct probability. Okay, so it should be fairly clear that you can generalize that to arbitrary propositions. So what about this coherent AND operator then? It's not directly implementable. OK, okay, there's no measurement which will do that. And one way you can show that is if you look at the largest eigenvalue of A dagger A, it's 3 and it should be less than or equal to 1. But we can find a measurement operator that's basically proportional to that, and the largest constant proportionality is 0.3 then. So that's a valid measurement operator, and if we just take this operator here, then they define a generalized measurement. So if I perform this measurement, then if I get the success outcome and discard the second qubit, then I've succeeded in performing this operator. Otherwise, there's nothing that I can do apart from abort and restart the whole algorithm from the beginning. Now, this is a non-deterministic algorithm, and it's not. And I said non-deterministic for a reason, rather than probabilistic, because the probability of success is actually going to go down exponentially with the number of n-Venn gates. Now, I don't think that there's anything that you can do about that in general, because you can show you can derive some results about the optimal probability of being able to test such things, and you can show it that in the worst case, it ought to go down exponentially. So really, what we've shown is that this is something you can do on a quantum computer with non-zero probability of success, even though it's arbitrarily small probability of success. I'm going to skip over some things because I want to finish on time. So it's easy to generalize this to having your elementary propositions being of arbitrary rank. And of course, also on d-dimensional Hilbert spaces. It would be nice to have some sort of upper or lower bound on the size, the dimension of the Hilbert space that's needed to get any possible probability assignments for a particular sequential quantum logic formula, because that would tell me something about the complexity of this algorithm. You can have a notion of testing multiple propositions, which of course you would need if you wanted to build a full model of computing out of this. Typically you have many inputs and many outputs. So you could define, there's at least a couple of natural ways of defining that. One is you could start off with an underlying sequence of measurements that stipulate that the propositions have to be defined on disjoint subsets of those. Or you could perhaps possibly, a way that's possibly natural is you could apply what's called the quantum fan-out operator, which basically copies the values of the qubits that store the result. It copies all their values on a computational basis. Of course, that typically gives you something that's entangled between the two. So the logical interpretation of that particular way of doing things isn't very clear. Okay, so really there are more open questions than there are results in this talk, but I think they're interesting ones. The first thing is, I started out by saying, you know, I wanted a nice notion of what the sort of Boolean algebra of quantum computation is. And it could be something that's closely related to this, but it needs to be modified. In particular, we want to characterize what we can do deterministically on computer rather than non-deterministically. So the question is, can you modify this SQL in some way such that all the sequential propositions that you can form can be tested one way or the other, true or false? There's a quantum measurement that corresponds to that. So there are a couple of ways you might go about doing that. One is you could just modify the definition of the sequential conjunction in some way such that it always gives you valid generalized measurement operators. I have an idea of how one might go about doing that, which I don't have time to go into. Another way of doing it is sort of inspired by measurement-based quantum computing is, in that model you don't need to actually perform any possible measurement on the quantum system, so perhaps restricting the allowed subspaces that you can test would allow you to get something that you can do deterministically. However, perhaps there's some things that we can do with the original sequential quantum logic itself. For instance, although it's not perhaps the logic of quantum computing in any sense, perhaps it's the logic of interested models of computing. For instance, Scott Anderson recently introduced the idea of quantum computing with post-selection. So that's a model of quantum computing where at some stage in the computation you're allowed to make a measurement and fix by fiat what outcome of that measurement is going to occur. So it kind of throws away some of the probabilistic aspect of quantum computation. So of course you can do these SQL computations within that model. And the question would then be, does it characterize everything that you can do in the model of computing? And what's interesting about that? So incidentally, Scott Aronson's originally introduced this to prove some rather interesting results about the connection between quantum and classical complexity theory. So perhaps there's some more along those lines which can come out of this. I think perhaps the most interesting thing is this idea which was introduced here, that you could perhaps view renormalizations in the sense of the density matrix renormalization proof as itself a new paradigm for talking about quantum computing. In particular, since it always involves projecting onto subspaces and throwing parts of your system away, it gives you an idea for what a fundamentally irreversible model of quantum computing might be. So the received wisdom for many years was that quantum computing had to be reversible, but perhaps that's not the case. Perhaps we can think about models where you throw away parts of the system as you go along. So an interesting question, which is really related to physics in a quite concrete way, would be to determine which of the schemes for density matrix renormalization would actually give you universal models of classical and quantum computing. Now the reason that's interesting is because that's closely related to whether computers can efficiently simulate or efficiently determine the properties of quantum systems. In particular, DMRG is used to determine, for instance, properties of the ground states of Hamiltonians. And so, of course, if you find such a scheme that's universal for quantum computing, then one would expect that then it's associated to a particular Hamiltonian or class of Hamiltonians, and one would expect that those are hard to determine the properties of on the classical computer, because otherwise, you have if that weren't the case, then you'd have something that's universal for quantum computing, and you would also be able to simulate quantum computing classically. The closing question is the one that I originally started out with, which I haven't yet solved. Which is there a natural quantum logic, some kind of quantum logic, which has a satisfiability problem that's in one of the quantum analogs of NP? Okay, so I'll stop there. Thanks.